Back then, I literally was just going from place to place, basically introducing myself and asking people, may I go to your, you know, to your field and to spend time with the horses? And they were like, absolutely, you can come here, stay here, sleep in the barn if you want. And I moved too quickly and they got my hand and they got my thigh. We had camp on the ice at minus 40 plus in a sleeping in tents with no heat. My fingers might not work in the 3 seconds of opportunity that I have. I don't think it's about the best picture in the world. I'm not aiming to... I never taken any of my photos to contests. Like, I don't do any of that stuff.
This is the ProCo 360 podcast for people who love Colorado and love hearing from Colorado's most inventive and successful entrepreneurs. Today's guest is Guadalupe Leis, a world-class nature and wildlife photographer. Several years ago, I walked into a gallery in Aspen and stopped dead in my tracks. The photos of Icelandic horses took my breath away. They were so visceral, a feeling that I didn't get from other wildlife photographers I typically see. These seemed so different that I ended up doing an episode with the photographer, and Guadalupe Leis since then has thrived. She's grown her business. She's created photographic series in the Arctic, featuring polar bears, wolves, and sled dogs, and sometimes images just of the sheer awe of the region. She's been deep in Africa, photographing elephants, apes, and giraffes. Her work and her mindset have both evolved in ways that I wanted to explore, and so, and she's still based in Aspen. In fact, we're in her gallery today. I'm in Aspen, and we're in her gallery recording here. So, Guadalupe, glad you're back on ProCo 360.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time to come talk to me again. And yeah, I'm thrilled to be here with you.
Oh, good as fun. My wife Cheryl's here. You showed us around the studio and some amazing photos. So we're going to talk about how you got those and such too. By the way, listeners, we're going to cover some of Guadalupe's backstory. But if you really want to hear about how things evolve for Guadalupe, go to the ProCo 360 podcast in your app and search for ProCo 360 and listen to our prior session. Okay, so following the introduction, Guadalupe, some of the listeners have not, probably most, have not heard your prior episode, which we did several years ago. So let's talk a bit about your background before we move forward. And you came to photography kind of sideways. I mean, photography wasn't the original plan for you. You were going to do something more responsible. So talk about how you got here.
Yes, I mean, it feels like it was literally 100 years ago. But I think so differently now than maybe even when I spoke to you 5 years ago. But the idea was to definitely go into a more conservative career. I discovered a camera in my house, and I really started practicing using it and spending time with it. And obviously, I fell in love with it. And the journey was very long, but, you know, I never stopped taking photos since I was very young when I had the camera. Long story short, what happened that when I moved to the US when I was super young, 20 years of age, I came with my camera, no money, but with a camera in a tripod. And it really built my identity, my character, my career in a way. It was a long journey. I studied photography, and I have an education in commercial photography. And I was taking photos before that for many, many years, but definitely was a long journey, and it led me here today.
Guadalupe, you said, you know, that this whole route through fashion, all that somehow ended up here, but really, when did you get your first idea to say, I'm going outside, I'm taking my work outside, I'm going to turn my professional career into natural photography?
A little happy accident. I was in Europe working on a series of cityscapes for a gallery in Paris that was interested in that work that I was doing. And I decided to go to Iceland for 6 days after literally going from city to city all over Europe, very busy. And a musician that I'm very fond of was recording music in Iceland, and I was very curious to know why he was drawn to Iceland in the first place and why he was repeatedly going back to record in Iceland. And sure enough, I went to Iceland, discovered the Icelandic horses, and that changed my life.
Were you taking pictures of the man and becoming inspired right on the spot?
100%. I mean, the day that I got there, I remember like it was yesterday. This was almost 2 decades ago now. I got out of the airport, drove out without a plan. All I knew is that I had 6 days to explore the island. And I saw a little fold on the side of the road. And in that fold is the first picture of my first book from Iceland. And the rest is history.
Wow. Yep. Now, you had to go and actually, though, when you went back, ask the farmer or the ranchers to if you could photograph their horses. Were they curious?
Yes. This was lucky for me before Iceland became so popular and hot for tourism. So everyone was very chill about things back then. Now there's maybe too much tourism, so they're a little bit more guarded, I suppose. But back then, I literally was just going from place to place, basically introducing myself and asking people, "May I go to your, to your field and just spend time with the horses?" And they were like, "Absolutely, you can come here, stay here, sleep in the barn if you want." And I did that for 5 years.
Wow, you slept in barns?
I literally stayed with them. I helped them feed their horses and became a little bit part of the family for a tiny bit of time and helped them out. And they would just let me do my thing. And it was beautiful. Yes.
Oh, how nice. Now, were you thinking about the commercial nature of your work at that time? You're out there shooting horses and...
No, not at the beginning. I mean, I did say to myself, I think I want to make a book out of this. I had that vision very clearly without, I don't know where it came from, but it was very clear to me that I wanted to put together a body of work about the Icelandic horse. There was no grand plan. I wasn't thinking from a financial standpoint, nothing like that. It was just a natural, thought that came to me, and I decided to take it very seriously.
Yeah. Now, yes. Why books? Because I'm in your gallery, and I'm looking over your shoulder, and there are several beautiful books, and I've seen them, and the photos are beautiful. But I think about photographic art, and I think about what's on the wall. So why books?
I am so lucky. Intuitively, I felt like for me to connect with whatever might be a place or an animal, it has to be a long-term project, a long-term thing. And the books really gave me that, because you had to revisit and revisit to build a body of work big enough to create a book. And when I take projects, I decide to do something, I kind of like to go very deep into it, and the books become a very personal journey. It's not just about the picture anymore. It becomes something much deeper than that. And I always said, if I go to the same place over and over again and I don't come back change, then I haven't been there long enough. And the books are really doing that for me. So it became the best way that I can sort of express myself with that goes beyond the picture, beyond a piece of art that you see on a wall. It's kind of like if I compare it with a musician, for them probably completing an album that has a beginning, middle, and end. Maybe you might like a song and you're just listening to that song over and over again, but for the person that actually put that album together, it goes way deeper, right? So that's kind of how I see it.
Yeah. Did you ever want to quit? It's so cold.
Yes, it is cold. it is cold. But
and you're laying there on the ground. Yes. What are you wearing? You're wearing one of these.
Yes, we have suits. We have all the gear. I mean, very snow pants, under layers, hand warmers. I mean, sometimes you have all these restrictions with weight, and you have so many cameras that you bring with you. But I bring lots of weight on hand warmers. You're prepared. You have the right gear. I have a big challenge now just because I have a hand that is not working very well and it doesn't have circulation. So that's my new challenge.
So talk about that.
Yes. So I'm working on my fifth book is going to be on polarverse. I started it in 2018, so almost 9 years ago. It's called The Lonely Wanderer. I've been going to the Arctic back and forth every year, some years more than others. Now I'm really pushing and doing a lot of trips. Last year we were finishing a short film that is called The Lonely Wanderer on polarverse. It's a 25-minute film that I'm doing with my Icelandic partner, throwing cobbles on. And long story short, what happened, it is a long story, but what happened is that we were trying to come back home. We got stuck in the Arctic. We couldn't get out. Weather got bad. And I was on the site working on photographing the Canadian Eskimo dogs from Baffin Island. These are the original Canadian Eskimo dogs that are in danger of extinction today. These dogs are not like dogs that you will think of as anything that you can imagine as a dog. These dogs survive the same environment as polar bears. They eat the same food that polar bears eat. They need the rubber seal, the fat seal to survive out there. They're extremely strong. They still use them to hunt polar bears, and they keep them chained on the ice.
So these are domesticated, but sounds like they're semi-wild.
100% semi-wild. These dogs, to give you an idea, cannot be loose. They don't trust these dogs to be loose today. They're too dangerous to go to town, and it's a big mess. So that will be a very long conversation to have to talk about this project. It's a book that comes out in the fall. It's called Echoes of the Pack. I came back from the ice literally brokenhearted. We had a very heavy experience that is going to come out in once the short film is out. On the ice with the polar bears, and to ease my mind, I went to continue to photograph the dogs. And long story short, I was tired. I was exhausted. It was time to go home. We were drained. And I continued to photograph these 120 chain dogs that I've been photographing for these past 3-4 years. And I moved too quickly, and they got my hand, and they got my thigh, and they destroyed my hand. And they let me go after that. And I have no circulation in my fingers because obviously the damage of the nerves was quite deep. So now my hand doesn't like the cold. I try to make a very short version to try to explain.
Wow.
Yeah. So now the challenge is it's not so much my body now. It's kind of funny how you step to a whole different level. You think that the discomfort is the cold, but now the discomfort is that you have a hand that... the nerves are all destroyed, so now you had to deal with that. But
well, I was going to ask you if this ever feels dangerous as a job, and it sounds like, yeah.
Yes, I mean, I never had an issue because we are very respectful to the animals, and we don't push our boundaries. We don't move too fast. We don't do anything that might trigger an animal to basically give you any kind of warnings that they're not happy, that they're... you're in their space. So I've been very aware, and I learned that long time ago, and I'm very proud to say that we do things very respectfully. This was my mistake. I was tired. It was time to go, and I moved too quickly, and that was it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that must have been frightening.
Very much.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky to be here, to be honest with you.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah,
those dogs could have...
There was no doctor to go to either. So yeah, it could have been the end for me for sure. I'm not making it up. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, when I look at your photographs, there are thousands of wildlife photographers. So do you try to differentiate, or does it just happen?
No. I'm very lucky, I suppose. I do what I do. I try not to follow too many photographers. It's hard when you get to meet so many in your travels, not to stay engaged. And I don't want to compare. It's very difficult because there's so many talented photographers out there. But I found a way to follow my heart and my intuition and do it in a way that that speaks to me and touches me. And then if people like it, great. But I honestly took a very different approach, I feel like, in the way that I'm presenting the work, if you will.
So do you know photographers that you share ideas with, or even skills or anything like that? Are you just, is it better to go it alone?
No, I kind of like to keep it to myself. There are a lot of other photographers that are way more technical than me, way better than me. I am okay with that. I want a white canvas as much as I can. I don't want the comparison. I don't want to see too much what other photographers are doing. And it's been working well for me. Mm-hmm. It keeps it pure. It keeps it honest. It keeps it, it's a reflection of myself in a way. Yeah. And sometimes it's hard to see it with photographs because you're just taking a picture of something. It's not like a song that comes from within. But if you go deep into it, there's always different ways of doing it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I would think that if you and I saw the exact same image, that not only would your skills be better, but even the way I frame it, even the way anything, I just, you know, that's the talent that you bring, right?
Yes. I mean, sometimes I think I'm an awful photographer, honestly. I doubt myself a lot. I really do. I don't think, like I said, somehow my journey has taken me in a journey that is not just about the photo. And I've been writing a lot lately. So my new book has a lot of poetry in it. And it goes way beyond the picture.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that because I was looking at your Facebook posts recently.
Oh, boy.
And well, but I was my thought was, it sounds like she's becoming more poetic, that you're working, you know, and I had a couple that I took. I did some screenshots. Here's one. It says, perhaps I don't go into the wild because I feel connected to animals. Perhaps I go because in their presence, I finally feel connected to myself. And then there's one that sounded even more poetic, which was, you wanted to be trusty and true, but feathers felt from our wings. So talk about this. It sounds like you're moving in that direction.
I guess it's always been there. I just never put it out there. Because my muse has always been music, and music, deep lyrics. That's been my thing since I'm very young. That's kind of what I've been attracted to and inspired me so much in my life, music. I play music, but just for fun, for myself. And I guess now I'm just getting a little bit out of my shell and putting some thoughts out. It's very dangerous for me because I was like, I wonder what he's going to pull out, because sometimes I'm going to bed and something comes out and I just write it down.
Well, but you always accompany it with your photos.
Yes.
So that's good. So is this, when you think about who you were as a photographer 5 years ago, first of all, you say you don't really follow other photographers. Are you improving your skills? Do you work on improving your skills, or have you shifted your mind to, you know, the subjects and you don't worry about the skills?
I don't worry so much about the skills. It's a great question. I do need to keep up, and working in the Arctic is very different than, let's say, working in Africa. So I need to learn how to, you know, put a camera upside down and put a monopod down on the ice in the best way I can, so I can photograph a polar bear from low angle, things like that. But it all comes from things that I already know. I'm a very graphic photographer, so for me, it's not even about lighting. Sometimes it's just the moment that I'm, you know. There's always room for a lot of, learning and just doing things better. But for me, it goes way deeper than that. I don't think it's about the best picture in the world. I'm not aiming to, I never taking any of my photos to contests. Like, I don't do any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Most photographers really want to win all those competitions, the big competitions, and get the front page of Nat Geo. I have no interest in that. And that's okay. I think there's room for everybody.
Well, I'm going to take a quick break, and then I want to talk about Africa a little bit. I'm going to remind listeners, this is ProCo 360, voted best Colorado business podcast since 2021. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. This is a podcast for people who love Colorado and the stories of Colorado businesses and entrepreneurs. My guest today is photographer Guadalupe Lais. Hey, I want to thank our sponsors, Via Technologies hosts ProCo 360. Really appreciate the help your team gives me. And by the way, Via has built a very nice business. They kind of recruit really smart clients who can then partner with them to achieve some great things around client growth using web-based technology, digital marketing, and so forth. Also, my friends at Denver Ventures, we partner on some episodes to feature great Colorado companies. So, all right, you mentioned that Guadalupe, that the Arctic, which seems so interesting, is a lot different from Africa. So talk about that a little bit.
Very different. You couldn't be more out of your comfort zone than being in the Arctic. I mean, I think it's the hardest thing I ever done. Like, I don't know if I could ever do anything harder than the Arctic. If you're camping on the ice, we have camp on the ice at minus 40 plus in sleeping in tents with no heat, being out all day, no showers, obviously. Trying to keep yourself warm enough for when the right moment arrives, which you never know if it's going to be 10 hours being out in the field and you're already shutting down, like literally shutting down, your body shutting down yourself. It's very difficult. Sometimes you're so nervous. Sometimes I don't sleep for weeks before a trip because you're thinking about these things that you cannot control, which is obviously not very smart, right? My fingers might not work in the 3 seconds of opportunity that I have to get it.
Has that happened?
Of course it has, yeah.
Really?
Yes.
You're like, as soon as the shot comes, all of a sudden your fingers can't work?
Yeah, because your fingers get numb and you can feel them and you cannot press the trigger.
Wow.
It sounds insane, but it's so true. Yeah.
Do you ever feel heroic being out there? Sometimes I watch like news people or weather people and they're standing in the middle of a storm and clearly they think a lot of themselves in this heroic scenarios. You know, you're shaking
Not at all.
It. No?
Not at all, no. If you spend a lot of time with animals, it's very humbling. You realize how safe we play it. We really do.
Wow.
I truly do think that not at all.
What about when you're in Africa? Do you ever feel in danger? Do you ever feel that these shots are putting you in harm's way?
No.
No. Okay.
No. And we also do things in a way that is safe and more so thinking about the animal first. So you never want to get in a situation they are pushing too much. That's important.
Yeah.
Of course, I like proximity. I like to get as close as I can, but we always do it with respect. I have been as close as we are right now, which I don't know what that is. I don't know. To the head of a lion in front of me. But, you know, you had to read the situation and know when is too much. When can you do it? If the animal is relaxed, it depends on the situation, right? It's not the same an animal that has their calves or is mating or is actually hurt. If an animal is, it depends on the situation, but yeah.
Well, so as we kind of wrap, I wanted to ask you about the experiences here in the gallery. You've been quoted as saying sometimes your customers will cry when they see photos and things. I mean, what is your job in curating the gallery and helping customers find photographic art that's right for them?
I'm not a very good salesperson. I just tell the stories and I'm very honest. I try to, I don't know if it's a practice. You will tell me, you're the smart guy.
Yeah.
I think it's a practice. Practicing to being as honest as you humanly can be. I like that. I don't want to, yes, of course I need to sell art. This is how I make my living. This is how I do my trips. But I like to listen and then guide them through it. I only share my experiences, and that's really truly all I do. People sometimes ask me, I feel so afraid of these animals, but then I feel so drawn to them and so moved. And I always go back to the conversation of the lack of connection that we have with the natural world, and that's where all I think it comes from. This fear, all these feelings that people have. And I don't know, I try to go deep into that conversation sometimes when I have the time. But
people like that. I mean, that's what draws them to to art, isn't it? Is to hear from the artist.
Yes, and it's lovely to hear all the stories because for everybody it hits a different spot in them. Like it's different for everyone. Yeah.
So. And by the way, listeners, we were talking before we even started about what it takes to even display your art. I mean, you can spend several thousand dollars simply to produce, frame, and so forth. I mean, you've got well into the six figures of inventory in your gallery. You also have to invest, I don't know, what does it cost to go on a, how long are your trips to Africa or to the Arctic?
Oh boy.
They're weeks, right?
You can easily spend, I don't know, I don't know if talking about numbers is a good idea, but like you can easily spend $40,000 on a trip.
Yeah.
Or more.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so I think about, and because this is an entrepreneurial show at some point, you know, I think about what's involved in investment on your behalf to even bring these pieces of art to consumers.
The honest truth, I think, is God and the universe has gifted me with this opportunity because I gave it all. I risk everything from the very beginning. Everything that I will make, I will put it back into it. And it just worked.
Yeah.
Because I invest so much into making the books and one more trip and we're missing this. And I think it all comes back to me. I don't know. I don't know. There's some magic there that I don't understand. Yeah.
But you're one person. Do you have others? Do you have staff? Do you have others on your team?
I have employees. They come and go and it's not easy. It's not easy in Aspen to have consistency with employees and so on. I have people that help me, but I'm literally the core of everything behind this. Yes.
But it seems like you like it that way.
Not necessarily. I would like to be able to have a little bit more balance, but I'm not scared of cleaning the floor when I had to clean the floor if no one is coming to open next day. It's just, it has required a lot of me to make it this far, and I'm okay with that. I think being humble is very important. It doesn't matter if it's a tricky thing. We have celebrities coming here and buying the work, and so many names that I can throw out there, and it's very impressive, right? Like it's just incredible that people love it and take it home, and it's quite expensive. But I think it's a beautiful thing to come from so humble. Because you're not afraid to doing the dirty work as well, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, I was curious before I wrap up too, after you go to a shoot, you might have, after you're out for weeks, you might have 10,000 photographs. You personally go through all of those, of course, and choose the ones you like. Is there post-production done on them?
No. I keep it. If I had to spend more than 3 minutes editing a picture, it means that it's a bad picture. No. My work is very simple. The commercial work really helped me to frame whatever I want the picture to be, try to frame it, you know, as it is, the composition just to be what it is. The only thing that I tend to do is desaturate my tones on digital photography. I don't like loud, but it's a simple process.
That's so interesting that you desaturate, because so many wildlife photographers or nature photographers seem to oversaturate, and then they print them on metal. I mean, they want it to scream. And you're cringing a little.
Yes. And the natural world is very, I don't know, it's very harmonic. I don't like very loud, but I don't like loud music either. So I think it just goes well with kind of how I see things and what I like. Yeah.
So what's in front of you now?
In front of me?
Yeah. As far as next projects, developments.
There's a lot going on right now. So I don't know how I'm going to honestly juggle everything. I'm trying to find good people to be part of my team and help me with the business side of things right now. Because I have a little short film coming out. We're going to bring it to film festivals. We're very proud of what we created. And it's brutal, it's honest, it's very exciting. So it's very exciting. I think it might be a turning point in my journey, this short film that we have.
And the topic?
The lonely one that we film in the Arctic is about the polar bear, but it became about me and it became about a reflection of everything, really. Mm. It's It's deep. Right. It's very honest. It's nothing like you will see. It's not a documentary about polar bears. It's nothing like that. And then, yeah, I have a book coming out in the fall, Echoes of the Pack, the Canadian Eskimo Dogs from the Arctic. And we're trying to figure out how to open another gallery in Houston. Someone is helping me with that right now. So hopefully we can make that happen. There's so much that we're working on. So, yeah.
Do you have the next photo shoot that you're looking forward to the very most?
Yes, I came back from the Arctic 20 days ago. I go back to Greenland in a month and change. The 18th of August, I go back to Greenland. I'm trying to photograph those gigantic icebergs for transitional photos that I need for my book, The Lonely Wanderer. And there's a couple of fjords that we're going to go to that we know that some polar bears are roaming around that area. So we're going to try to do that. And then I go back to Svalbard in September, north of Norway. So more polar bears.
Wow.
And great. That's what I'm working on. Yes.
Great. Well, I think we'll end on that note. And what a great conversation. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. And today on ProCo 360, you've been listening to my conversation with photographer and entrepreneur Guadalupe Lace. Great getting back together and getting updated on everything you're doing.
You're so kind. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Listeners, glad you're here on ProCo 360, where we say live, work, love Colorado, because you and I and my guests can be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You make the show successful by subscribing to the ProCo 360 podcast. And if you haven't yet, it's a huge help if you submit a review in your app. Thanks again to show sponsors Via Technologies and Denver Ventures. That's the show. Live, work, love Colorado.